Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Monday Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 3:02 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is October 18th. The first futures-based Bitcoin ETF is going to launch tomorrow. Now, there's also some talk of a physically backed ETF opening. And I think it's probably not a bad time to start thinking about what are the differences between those two kinds of funds, because one thing is that there's a reality at that I think probably some people don't appreciate is that despite the fact that Bitcoin has rallied considerably and up approximately 50% in the course of a month, and that's almost certainly pricing in the potential for these ETFs to launch. But it is worth considering that when we look at the futures curve, and we can then clearly see that what we have is not a backwardation, but a contango in the futures for October, November, and December, all the way through to December of 2022. Now, of course, these are cash-settled futures, and we do have a spot price that is marginally above where the October contract will settle. So we have a backwardation between spot in the front month and then a contango all the way out the curve. And then we can think about, well, what does a futures fund own? It's going to own the futures, not the spot rate. So therefore, we can only then look at the relationships. What it means then is that the futures fund is guaranteed to lose money on the contract rolls. And we can see this very clearly on the futures curve, where the future price falls down the curve. Not so much that this doesn't give us a reflection of what the price is going to be in the future, more like it tells us that the price in the future will fall to where it is today based upon the cost of carry. And that's generally how futures work. So then we can think about the US oil fund, because it has done an extraordinarily poor job of tracking the oil price. And the time when these types of funds do well is when you have a backwardation. But Bitcoin doesn't have a backwardation. So let's just then think about the oil price. The US oil fund has been doing somewhat better of late. And then we can think about crude oil, and there's a clear backwardation. So the December price is higher, and you can see then that the shape of the curve is different. So instead of prices falling down the curve from the future to the present, we have the present escalating down towards the future. And this is representative of a supply shortage. So oil prices were a little softer in here today, but they're still trading in a backwardation. Doesn't mean that we can't have some pause of consolidation. And certainly the decline that we saw in natural gas today is probably taking some of the wind out of the advance in the oil price. So US natural gas pulled back in a dynamic manner. Not only did it gap down, but it closed close to the lower side of the range on the day. Now, we had news earlier on in here today that Gazprom has been booking less space in pipelines coming to Europe. So then natural gas in the UK, originally it just popped on the upside and then gave up most of the advance to close out the day pretty much unchanged relative to the close on Friday. So there's still the potential here of demand destruction, given just how high prices are, even though they're down 50% off the peak from a couple of weeks ago. And it suggests that we're still in a corrective phase overall for natural gas prices, but I still remain very much of the view that we're unlikely to unwind all of the advance, and that we're in a new price environment overall. So this is obviously contributing to inflationary pressures. Now let's just think again about Bitcoin, because it has been one of the best performing assets over the course of the last few weeks. And Now it's testing the all-time peak, and we are on the cusp of ETFs being created. Now, then the question, of course, is that do people, have they really paid any attention to the fact that futures-based ETFs only do well in a backwardation environment, and that they're almost guaranteed to lose money? Because if sophisticated investors have come to that conclusion, then it will be a case of buy the rumor, sell the news. On the other hand, if they're holding on to the idea that there will also be physically backed ETFs, well, then that will withdraw liquidity from the market. And that could be an additional, well, it would be an additional whale-like investor, the kinds of people who have been buying for years and never intend to sell. So it will further withdraw supply from the market, and that could help to support prices. But then, of course, those people that are holding price, are holding supply off the market, they're no longer price setters. And that then contributes to acute selling pressure occasionally, because when someone is unwilling to sell, well, then they no longer set price. And the price can fall, and then, of course, it would fall even further if they decided to sell. And they only then become significant additional players in the market when they step in and start buying again. I do apologize for my phone ringing. I forgot to turn off the ringer. Now, when we think about everything else that's going on in this market right now, well, the New Zealand dollar is strengthening rather abruptly. And when we look at the performance relative to the Australian dollar, it's bounced emphatically from around the 95 level and the region of the 200-day moving average. It's in the middle of the range that's been forming since 2015, and it looks increasingly likely that it is going to continue to firm from this level, because there's the clear potential that the New Zealand Central Bank is going to continue to raise rates. So that's contributing to government bond yields trending higher and up to about 2.4% right now, which is pretty much world beating for the 10-year. This also suggests that we're in an environment where yields are likely to continue to rise, and it's beginning to weigh on the stock market. And the New Zealand stock market has been among the best performers in the world, and it had a fantastically consistent trend up from the lows in 2009, and really became consistent after it started finding support in the region of the trend mean from about 2011-12. Well, it had a brief sojourn below the 200-day moving average during the pandemic panic, and subsequently got right back to finding support in the region of it, and particularly from this year. But there's been a significant loss of momentum, and now it's sort of coming back and testing this trend mean again. So it really needs to hold the 12,000 level. That's the previous peak, and it needs to demonstrate that it can continue to find support in the region of the trend mean if everyone's going to remain reasonably sanguine about the market. Generally speaking, when interest rates begin to rise, well, then banks do well, and two of the largest market cap shares on the index are banks. And just if one were to look only at the market cap, well, they represent about 50% of the index, but it's a free float market cap weighted index, so they don't have quite that weighting. Then we can think about the other big arbiter, because New Zealand has done fantastically well over years because they've adopted and they've held on to a very strict economic policy where they've been willing to raise interest rates, and they've kept their debt to GDP very low. Well, the other defining characteristic of the market is that property prices have been rising, and people have been looking on New Zealand as a place to invest and as a bolt hole from the ills of the world. So property prices have been rising, but the vast majority of mortgages have a fix of 1 to 2 years, which means that people tend to be rather interest rate sensitive. And the other country that is particularly exposed to interest rates like that is the UK. And there's also speculation that the Bank of England is going to be raising rates, and gilt yields have completed this inverted head and shoulders base formation. So we have two shoulders and a well-defined bottom in here, and now it's pushing higher. So this is also creating some speculation that the pound will be higher interest rate type currency. So it's steadying around the region of the trend mean right now. And this looks like a base formation, and 140 being the lower side of the overhead trading range, and the upper side of this base is a big psychological level. If the UK does go ahead and raise interest rates in an aggressive manner, and there is some speculation that they might even raise by 50 basis points before the end of the year, well, I think that that's probably a bit too ambitious. But it's going to expose UK mortgage holders to a lot of interest rate risk. The vast majority of mortgages in the UK are floating rate, and we've had a profound contraction in government bond yields over the course of the last few decades. So that has allowed consumers to take on a great deal more debt. And now yields are back at levels we haven't really seen since 2016. And or at least that's where the lows were in 2016. We did get briefly above them in 2017 and 18 before the big declines. Now it's coming back up again. Now obviously it has not yet broken the downtrend, and we're really only in the process really of breaking out of this little base and pushing up into this overhead trading range. It could yet fail, and plans to hike interest rates might be abandoned, but inflationary pressures are definitely rising. And I think it's particularly notable that inflationary pressures are rising in island nations with independent monetary and fiscal policy. So in New Zealand and in the UK. And that's quite normal because generally it's more expensive to move or to get products in and to ship products out. And that contributes to inflationary pressures. Now when we think about the FTSE 250, well, it's been one of the better performing indices overall, and it's now in the region of its trend mean, so it would certainly be very comforting if it can continue to find support in this area. But we have to remember that this is a mid-cap index, so then it's been a clear outperformer for the last decade, and a good part of the reason for that was because of low interest rates. So perhaps then there is the potential, at least, that a larger cap index will do better because they generally tend to be better capitalized and they've got bigger cash flows overall. And the FTSE 100 is holding this move above the 7,000 level. Well, then let's think about what's going on in terms of US government bonds, because there is also speculation that the Federal Reserve is going to begin tapering this month, and or at least next month, and then that they will be done with their tapering process before the end of the first half of next year, by which time they'll start raising interest rates. So that's also bringing back into perspective the potential that interest rates will begin to rise. And of course, inflationary pressures in the USA are also taking off. So then there's the big question whether this is in fact tapering, whether these inflationary pressures are temporary or are they going to be more persistent? And I think that rather than think about the upward pressure that we've seen, for example, in used vehicles, and eventually that's going to be sorted out because we're going to get supply chains back running on time, and the shortage of parts will sort itself out, and we'll get into a more benign economic environment eventually. But then when we think about wages, well, when you re-educate a population and tell them that they are in fact worth more per hour than they've been paid before. And I was speaking with a number of, I was at a dinner party on Friday, and there was a dentist there, and she was talking about how difficult it was to get people to come back to work. She was saying that her hygienist, they had been forced to close for 3 months in 2020, and then her hygienist wouldn't come back to work because she was making plenty of money by being unemployed. So she didn't come back to work until after her unemployment benefits had expired. But when she came back, she asked for an assistant. Now, of course, a hygienist is a dental assistant, so it's really an assistant was asking for an assistant, and she wouldn't work without one. So, well, eventually they had to fire her, but they haven't been able to hire anyone else in her stead. And they're having an extraordinarily difficult time finding people, and particularly people of caliber and training that they might once have been happy to hire, because everyone is looking for higher wages. But a lot of companies, and particularly people in industries where their payouts are dictated by insurance companies, well, they don't have the option of raising prices. So we're seeing this kind of push-pull within the economy, that there are some portions of the economy which don't have a lot of difficulty raising prices. So we can definitely think about, for example, the software sector. When a company like Microsoft adopts a subscription business model, if they decide that they're going to raise the price of Microsoft 365 by 5 cents, well, there's not a lot you can do about it. So that's contributing to the share pushing on to new high ground. And particularly when we look at how badly it did for the decade through to about 2014, well, it's really only in the early innings of a new bull market, and it's certainly one of the biggest beneficiaries of adopting a subscription business model. But then we can think about the flavors and ingredients sector. They're major contributors to the production of other foodstuffs, but they're having difficulty passing on their costs. So then when we think about how this is done on the medium term, well, it's been in a very rangy environment for what must feel like an awfully long time, nearly 5 years already, and it's just about holding on here in the region of the 200-day moving average. So we're certainly seeing this push and pull between the kinds of companies that can raise prices and those that can't, because inflationary pressures are continuing to mount. And certainly when we think then about the upward pressure that we're seeing in foodstuffs and in energy prices and in rents, well, then that's contributing to demands for wages. And those wage demands are likely to persist. And this power of people to continue to demand higher wages is going to persist until sufficiently large numbers of people have been re-encouraged back into the workforce. But a lot of people are retiring, and the continued strong performance of their portfolios has enabled a large number of people to accelerate their retirement plans. So with stock markets up well in excess of 100% in the last year and a half, then that's padded out the portfolios of a lot of people who were looking to retire, and now they have the means to retire. So that is excising a large number of people from the workforce that might otherwise have come back into the workforce and held down wages. So we're certainly in more of an inflationary environment. And gold prices continue to hold here around the 1800 to or 1750 to $1800 area. And we had a dynamic move down on Friday, which continued to demonstrate resistance in the region of the $1800 area. But whoops, and wrong chart there. When we think about it on the medium term, we have higher reaction lows, we have lower rally highs. This is a triangular pattern forming. When we get a breakout from a triangular pattern, it tends to be both dynamic and surprising most particularly in terms of its ferocity. So it's really when we think about how narrow the range is right now, particularly compared to where it was earlier this year, well, then it would suggest that we're coming imminently close to a significant breakout. And I think, well, I continue to think that it's more likely than not that that breakout is going to be on the upside, and that we're coming towards the end of this corrective phase overall, that these inflationary pressures are not simply transient, that they're going to persist for a while longer, and that that is likely to have a significant knock-on effect in terms of the stock market, and most particularly the bond markets, and that people will start to look for some form of hedge against the devaluation of currencies. Well, that's obviously also been one of the reasons why people have been interested in Bitcoin. But Bitcoin behaves a lot more like a risk asset than gold does. So then there's the potential that gold picks up interest as inflationary pressures begin to mount. When we then think about what's going on in China, well, the stock market there was in negative territory in here today, and it's increasingly likely that China Evergrande will have a third missed payment this week, and that will copper fasten the default scenario. And then, of course, there's the potential that it will not be the only one that defaults. So the CSI 300 has been pretty much going nowhere as the government continues to sidestep outright support for the property sector. But the Hong Kong property market has rebounded, and now it's right in the region of the lower side of the overhead trading range, and it's unwound more than half of its oversold condition relative to the trend mean. So there's the potential at least that at least a short term low has been found, but it's probably going to need an additional bullish catalyst in order to really confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. And the China H-Shares Index was well off its low in here today and bouncing from the lower side of what's effectively a 12-year range. With the Japanese yen remaining weak, then that's adding support to the stock market. And the Nikkei was able to hold on to the gain it put in the last 2 days of last week. The second section index has been ranging in the region of the upper side of this range, of this more than 3-year range for the last few months, and it continues to bounce from the region of the trend mean, which would suggest that what we're looking at is a consolidation. I think we're seeing more action in currencies now than we've seen in quite some time. So this is a clear breakout by the US dollar, and it has broken a 5-year downtrend. So this is a new pattern of weakness for the yen overall, with continued interest in the in potential for inflation and the scope for more interest rate hikes, and then for commodity prices to continue to trend, then that should start to lend support to commodity-related currencies. The Brazilian real has been holding around this 6 area now for more than a year and a half, and this is potentially a lower high for the dollar. the Russian ruble has also at least paused, and at least Russia has got less overseas debt than many other countries. Then the South African rand, which has been rallying for most of the last couple of years, is pausing around the 15 area, but there's still the potential that we're going to see additional strengthening from here if commodity prices continue higher. So there's certainly the potential here that there's going to be more interest in other currencies other than the developed market main pairs like euro dollar, whereas the dollar index was well off its highs in here today and continues to pause, but it's got more work to do if it's or I guess it's for the bears to prove if it's going to be more than a short-term pause here, because this is mostly euro, and Europe doesn't want a stronger currency either. But I think that there is certainly potential that emerging market currencies and commodity-related currencies will continue to do better. But the big question for the majority of countries is, will they be able to raise interest rates? And most particularly, against a background where mortgages are tied to short-term or on a floating rate rather than fixed rates. That's certainly going to be a bit of a hurdle for both the UK and New Zealand in trying to deal with inflationary pressures. I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.